Wasn't sure whether to greet all of y'all by name this evening or just say it's good to see each one of you here tonight, but it is good to see everybody tonight. We definitely are in the middle of a cold and flu season like we haven't seen in a while. I think they said this last week that, I don't know, on average, at least for several of the days, they had between 35 and 40 people gone from school, which just does not happen very much. So when the young kids are struggling with it, then we know that we are too. So it's good to see each one that could get out tonight and that's feeling good enough to be out this evening. I'd like to call your attention to a passage in Matthew chapter 10 to start with. Last week we read through verse 23, and then this week we picked up in verse 34, but I want to look at the verses in between. In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus says this, "A student is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It's enough for the student to be like his teacher and the servant to be like his master. If the head of the house has been called Beelzebub, how much more the members of his household? So do not be afraid of them. There's nothing concealed that will not be disclosed or hidden that will not be made known. What I tell you in the dark, speak in the daylight. What is whispered in your ear, proclaim from the roofs. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both the soul and the body in hell." And then he says this, "Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground apart from the will of your Father. And even the very hairs of your head are numbered. So do not be afraid. You are worth much more than many sparrows." And then he says, "Whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. But whoever disowns me before men, I will disown him before my Father in heaven." Well, we see a standard here that really is high. And Jesus is not really offering words of encouragement that they will not have difficulties. These are words of encouragement, but they're words of encouragement to keep on going, to go in the right direction. He tells us not to be afraid of men, and he tells us that whatever he has spoken in the dark or in private, that we're to speak in the light, in public. And so let me ask you this, are you doing that? How easy is that to do, especially when there are those who oppose you? I hardly ever watch the news anymore. I can hardly tolerate it. But when I see it, it's very evident that there is a rift between people right now that is just, I'd say it borders on hatefulness, but I don't think it borders on it. I think it's hateful. I think there's truly a strong dislike from one group to another. If we're not careful, we'll get caught up in that. We'll want to take the side of this one or the side of that one, but the only side we can really take is Christ's side. And the focus we need to have is, what do I need to be doing to serve Christ to the best of my ability? Because if we're not careful, we'll get caught up in all the worldly things. And again, some of them I don't deny are important to be thinking about, but they're not what we're here for. We've been talking about the importance of studying the Word so that you can find out what God has to say and then to do it. And the fact that by doing that very thing, sometimes we're going to run into opposition. And sometimes that opposition will be really strong, and sometimes it'll make us want to just kind of step back and keep our mouths closed. But we can't afford to do that, because we are here to serve God, and we're trying to get as many people that will also do that to join us. In Luke chapter 14 and verse 31, Jesus had given earlier the example of somebody building a tower. But in this passage, he talks about this. He says, "Suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he's not able, he'll send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything cannot be my disciple." Well, Jesus' point here is not that if the odds are overwhelming that you join the other side. His point is we need to count the cost. We need to see how important it is for us to have a self-determination to serve God no matter what may come. We need to truly count the cost so that we can take the stands that are necessary to take, because as he says, we're in a war. What is the passage that talks about there are battles going on in heavenly places that we know nothing about? There's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes that we really are not privy to, but we do know what's going on right in front of us. And Jesus expects us to count the cost, to see it is going to be tough, but then to figure out how you can fight the battle with what you have. The point is, we have God on our side, and so we're going to win. But sometimes we don't see that because we're in a physical world, and all we see are the physical people and the physical numbers that are opposed to us. And sometimes we're going to be tempted not to take a stand. But Jesus wants us to take that stand, but he wants us at the very beginning to count the cost and figure out, do we really want to follow him or do we not? In Matthew chapter 10 and verse 38, he says this: "If anyone does not take his cross and follow me, he is not worthy of me. And whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it." Well, that's just real cheery, isn't it? The idea of having to pick up a cross and to follow Christ. But the point through all these passages is this: there's a sacrifice that we need to make. A sacrifice, by definition, is hard. And also, by definition, most people won't make it. If you ever look around in this world and you see why only certain people seem to succeed in this field or that field, it's because there's only a certain number who are willing to pay the cost. I wasn't willing to pay the cost to become a doctor, so I'm not a doctor. I wasn't willing to pay the cost to become an architect, and so I'm not an architect. There's a lot of things that we can see that would take a great deal of time and a great deal of effort that are worthwhile, but we can't do everything. But when it comes to serving God, we all are required to do that. And it requires sacrifice on a regular basis. We have to pick up our cross and to follow Christ. Well, in James chapter 1, James puts it this way: "Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds." Now, what kind of an attitude is that? Pure joy when you face trials. I really enjoyed football a number of years ago when I was a young man, and got to watch the tail end of a guy named Jim Brown's career, and got to watch OJ before he went bad, and got to watch a lot of people who are really good. But there's one guy that I really think about when it comes to this idea of considering it pure joy when you face many trials, and his name was Christian Okoye. And Christian Okoye was a running back for the Kansas City Chiefs. They called him the Nigerian Nightmare, and they called him that for a good reason, because when he was running the ball, he looked for people to run over, and he did. I mean, he would just plow them over, and he considered it pure joy. Whenever these trials came up, when somebody tried to stop him, it was like, oh, good, let's see how good you are, and he would go right after him. Now, I'm not suggesting that we look for ways to punish people physically as we serve God, but I do think that we need to have more of an attitude of, this is something that is, if not enjoyable, it is something that brings joy. This service to God, this carrying the cross on a daily basis, this being willing to take a stand against sometimes tremendous odds. The reason we're doing that is because we're going to heaven. And there needs to be a joy there. And because of that, James says, consider it pure joy. But in verse 3, he says, because you know the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Well, if you'd like to, turn back over to Mark chapter 5, because we're going to see an example of perseverance, I think, that will hopefully make this picture a little bit more understandable when James talks about the perseverance that we need through the testing of our faith. And it involves the woman who had been subject to a terrible disease for 12 years. Let's start about the middle of verse 24 of Mark chapter 5. A large crowd followed and pressed around him, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all that she had. You ever feel like that? Yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I'll be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. Kind of underline that in your mind, freed from her suffering. At once Jesus realized that power had gone from him. He turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see the people crowding against you," his disciples answered, "and you can ask who touched me." But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. See, the glory was going to go to God for his power, and there wasn't going to be a miracle that was going to occur without people recognizing that so they could glorify God. And Jesus knew that power had left him. I imagine he knew exactly what was going on, but he pressed by saying that. And so it said, "Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, 'Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be freed from your suffering.'" Now think about that for a moment. 12 years she had spent. She had suffered with this for a dozen years. She had gone to doctors. She had spent her money. They couldn't help her. As a matter of fact, not only could they not help her, but it says she suffered at their hands. So they made it worse than she was to begin with, it would appear. But isn't it interesting, because she persevered, she was able to finally come into contact with Jesus and his healing powers. And when she did, she was healed and she was freed. Where were you 12 years ago? Some of y'all were probably sitting right here listening to me. I'm sorry. I hope it wasn't the same lesson. But 12 years ago, I was 45. I still had 8 good years of basketball left. And when I say good years, you understand that's relative. I could still shuffle around and I wouldn't get in too many people's way. But now, after that 12 years, it's been quite a number of years since I've been able to go out and enjoy that. A lot's happened in 12 years. A lot happened to her in 12 years. She could have given up, but she didn't. And don't you know that she was delighted that she had persevered? Well, the reason I bring that up, there have been times where there are certain principles about Christianity that I've kind of overlooked as I've gone through life. And because of that, I've missed out on a lot of things. When I was growing up, it was not fashionable for preachers to talk about grace within the areas that I was at. And they very rarely talked about grace. And because of that, I missed out on a lot of the joy that was available for me because of grace. And it wasn't until I, years later, started really studying grace and digging into it, that I was able to find out what God had really done for me by extending that. But until that point, I didn't get to enjoy that to its fullest. I'm sure I still don't enjoy it to the fullest, but a whole lot more than I used to. It was just, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, Carolyn and I came across a movie called The War Room. It was a movie, of all things, put on by a group of Baptists. And yet it was a movie about prayer. And it was so well done that it made us start reexamining our prayer life. I realized it was just a movie, but the truths that were contained within that movie were so powerful, and they had been ones that we had kind of overlooked. And it wasn't until we started applying those thoughts and started digging in and studying about prayer that we really were able to start taking a little more advantage of prayer than we had in the past. My point is, there have been a lot of years that we didn't take full advantage, still I'm sure don't, but better. But we didn't take full advantage of what God has given to us in prayer. We didn't take advantage of, or at least I didn't, of the knowledge of grace and what that does for us. We realize it's not a license for immorality, but it allows us the opportunity to come back every time. Tremendous power in grace. The reason that we study the Word of God, and particularly the reason that we study specific topics that we're interested in, is because it has the ability, God's Word does, to really free our lives. It frees us from different things that maybe we had not thought about before, that maybe we had just been maybe a little suspicious about before, and especially because somebody else was talking about it. And if somebody else was talking about it, well, we didn't want to venture too close to it. But if God's talking about it, it is incumbent upon us to seek it out. It's incumbent upon us to seek out Christ's instruction. This woman was sick for 12 years. What if she had given up after 10 years? She would have died in agony and the discomfort that she had on a daily basis. What if she had stopped after 1 year? What kind of a life is that where you just give up and year in, year out, you're just kind of accepting things that you don't have to accept? What if she'd have given up after 11 and a half years? And when Christ came, she just thought, I've been through too much. I'm just not going to keep going. See, the reason that James says, consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you face many trials, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. This perseverance is one of the keys to a really fine life, a life filled with joy and peace. It changes the way you are. It frees you from the sinful things in this life that maybe you just were bound to, either through your own ignorance or just through a misunderstanding of it. You weren't trying to misunderstand it, but you did. And maybe it's because of what we've been looking at the last 2 weeks. There are always people who are willing to pull us down, because they don't understand certain things and they don't think we need to be anywhere near that. And as we're on a quest for knowledge and wisdom, sometimes that makes a lot of people really uncomfortable and they will pull us down. And if we're not careful, we'll allow ourselves to be pulled down. The reason we need perseverance is we need to keep climbing. The reason we need perseverance is because there really is a cross we have to pick up and carry. And some days that's a lot less fun than other days, is it not? The point of all this is we cannot allow opposition in our lives, whether it's a self-imposed opposition or it's an opposition from others, to keep us from keeping on going towards Christ and God so that we can find out what they have for us, so that we can gain knowledge and wisdom, so that we can be set free. In Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 11, the writer says this: no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. One of the things I always talk to young couples about when they're about to get married is you're going to have to figure out some sort of discipline when you have children. I know that it has become, very fashionable not to use any type of physical discipline in our modern world. Because so many people are afraid that it will slop over into abuse, which it can. But I can tell you, I've seen a lot of people out in public whose kids have been screaming and throwing tantrums at the top of their lungs in public who are being abused by their parents every day because they're not giving them a proper discipline. When it comes to discipline, parents are going to have to figure out the best way to discipline. We use the scriptures to guide us on that. But the discipline has to be something that is worse than the perceived gain that they will get for disobeying. And that's one of the keys. If your kids are going out doing certain things, the discipline has to be so strong that they think, I don't ever want to even think about doing that again. I can tell you when our kids were growing up and they told their first lie that we caught them in, it went hard on them. How come? It's because we hated them? No. It's because if they got that within their life, it would become embedded within their life. And so we disciplined them. That discipline at the time did not seem very pleasant to them, but it produced a harvest of righteousness. Now we can talk to all of our kids who are all young adults, and we can talk to them. And when we talk, we know that they're telling us the truth. We don't have to worry about maybe them holding something back that they shouldn't be or whatever it is, because we know that they have been trained by the Word now to tell the truth. God disciplines us for our own good. There are things that we do. We get out of line. Maybe we start forsaking the assembly and we don't partake of the Lord's Supper on the first day of every week. And maybe we don't exactly see why, but we start seeing our life becomes harder and harder and harder. There's a reason for that. When we start abandoning one of the key points of our week, remembering what we're here for, it makes the rest of life hard because we've forgotten what we're here for. We'll get to thinking that we're here for physical things. There are a lot of people, multiple people, I imagine most people, hopefully not within this group, but I think most people are truly convinced that physical things are more important than spiritual things. And because of that, they don't discipline themselves to do the spiritual things first. Discipline is no fun. It means you have to deny yourself what you want to do at the time. But if you and I can discipline ourselves to gather on the first day of the week, to study, to show ourselves approved, to encourage one another as we see people going through trials that they're going through, to talk to a brother or sister that we're concerned about, even though it's no fun to do that. If we can do that, then life becomes more meaningful. And as we start doing these things more and more, we are freed and other people are freed from the bondage that they've been held in by Satan by living incorrectly. You and I have an absolute duty to find out everything we can about God's way and then to apply it to our life as to the best of our ability. And again, I want to say there's going to be a lot of people who that's going to offend, and there's going to be a lot of people who will want to pull us down. And so we really have to answer the question, do I have what it takes? Am I willing to continue the climb towards salvation? Or am I just going to give in and give up? What was it Paul said? Not that I have already grasped hold of this, but one thing I do, I press forward to the goal to reach the prize for which God has called me heavenward. That's what our life needs to be about, is reaching for that goal. There will be people that don't want us to reach it. Anybody that's ever played football that's had a ball and has been running, they know that the guys on the other team don't want them to reach the goal. I can assure you that Satan wants us to reach our goal even less. But God wants us to be with him forever. The question is, will we be willing to live the type of a life that God requires of us, keep our heads up and carry the cross, and make the sacrifices and have the perseverance we need to serve him while we can here so that we can be with him forever? Invitations open this evening. You may have a need for prayer. You may be ready to become a Christian. But whatever your needs are, won't you come forward and let us know while we stand and sing.